You are listening to Myth Behaving, a podcast with a little bit of attitude on the literary world. Won't you come myth behave with us? Hello, and welcome to Myth Behaving. This is episode number 15 of the Myth Behaving podcast, and we're recording on July 28th. I'm Carla Clifton, and joined with me today is my normal partner in crime, Mayor Wilson. Hello, Mayor. How are you today?
I'm good, Carla. How are you doing?
I am doing absolutely fabulous.
Are you in monsoon? Do you have monsoons? We're in monsoon season here.
No. We're like in hurricane season down here.
Yeah, no, we're in monsoons. It flooded in Las Vegas last week, and it's muggy and hot. So we get the hot and that humidity.
Oh, so, I don't even want to hear it because ours is humid here all the time. All the time. You know, we're right here on the coast in southeast Texas.
Yeah, I figured you would have a lot of humidity.
I don't think
I'd like that.
No, it's horrible. So it's just hot, or excuse my expression, damn hot all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, hello, listeners. Each Myth Behaving show features a special guest from the literary world. It could be a writer, a publisher, agent, editor, or anyone else connected with the world of publishing.
Plus, we have several special segments related to reading or writing.
Shh. Be very quiet when hunting books in the Library of a Myth Behaver.
And that means it's time for something from the Library of the Myth Behaver, which is me. Today, I'm recommending Tale of the Devil by Danielle DeVore. This is a young adult book for older teens. The writing in this book is taut, it's edgy, the main character serves more as an anti-hero than a hero. Matthias is a very, very troubled teenager, goes through some horrible things, and runs away. And while he's out on the street, he ends up getting killed, and wakes up to find out that he's been turned into a vampire. And this book just really captures all the angst and the anger he goes through, first as a human child, and then trying to adjust over to his vampire-ness.
His vampire-ness.
Yeah, I was trying to think of his, you know, of what to call it. But yeah, trying to come to terms with that, because he's not real happy about being turned into a vampire.
I wouldn't be real happy about it. It'd be kind of creepy. So anyway, that must mean our special guest today is Danielle DeVore. Welcome to the show, Danielle, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
We are so thrilled to have you chat with us today. I'm especially pleased because Danielle and I have known each other for about 2 years now, long before either of us was published, and that was kind of fun because she's another one along with Lindy Walker, and it was like the three of us got our contracts right about the same time. She's another one of the writers from Purgatory, and we all got those contracts right about the same time that we'd begun going through this together for over a year, and then boom, all of a sudden, it started paying off, and so we were the lucky trio there for a while. Danielle, tell us, what drew you to write about vampires?
I guess I was kind of always like the weird kid that liked the weird stuff, you know, ghost, monster movies, the whole nine yards. And it started, I would say, probably when I was about 3 years old, I got obsessed with bats. And it was like I had to get anything about bats under the sun. And I had taught myself how to read trying to look on the TV guide for when the Jeffersons was coming on. So my mom used to take me to the library. And that was back when they had the old-fashioned card catalogs, you know, and you'd flip through. And I was flipping through bats one day, and then I saw vampire bats. And, you know, it made a connection in my head that, you know, like on Sesame Street, there was the Count, and he was a vampire. But then I thought, well, that's not a real vampire. What's a real vampire? And then I started, like, digging through folklore and all types of things. And I guess I've just kind of always been, I wouldn't say obsessed with vampires, but interested in vampires. And it took quite a few years. People kept asking me, when are you going to write something of vampires? And I'm like, heck, I don't know. And finally, Matthias popped in my head one day.
It's awesome.
That is just such an interesting thing to do all the research so young and eventually see your dreams come into reality.
It was really interesting getting published. I'd say the book, writing the book itself, while I had the research done, the actual process of learning how to write a book and how to adapt to modern writing styles was a lot harder than the research actually was.
I can only imagine, because you're talking to someone that could not write their way out of a paper bag.
Yeah, but the research is fun. The research is so... I love doing research. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Now, that's the part that I would really like, is the research. Because
well, you do a lot of research anyway.
I love to do research, so that would go right along.
Of Truth and Mythery.
Of Truth and Mythery is a segment where we take a commonly held publishing or writing belief and examine whether it's true or just another myth. Danielle, feel free to answer this. You can only be published by one publisher.
That is definitely a total myth, because right now I'm operating with two separate publishers, which, believe me, it's like wearing 14 hats, and it's not easy, but it can be done. The biggest thing is to try and stagger release dates so that you don't have them one on top of each other and drive yourself completely mad.
Well, I find that very fascinating.
Yeah. And that would be so easy. I could imagine if you had two books coming out at the same time. I wouldn't want to go through that.
I couldn't imagine a worse nightmare, honestly.
Well, as someone that wants to know more, what made you go with two different publishers? Are you writing in two different genres?
It's not really genres. It's more so that the first publisher I signed with that published Hail the Devil, Earlander Publishing, they have a, I guess you could say, a rule that you have to sell 50 copies, e-copies, before the book goes into print. And on the East Coast, it seems like more people are still kind of wedded to the idea of a physical copy of a book versus ebook. So I wanted the opportunity for my family and whoever else would want to actually get a copy of the book instead of waiting for it to come into print. Also, the book that I have going out with Crescent Moon Press is an adult book, and I felt that they had more of a grasp on the urban fantasy thing, whereas Earlander does a lot of romance, and none of my books have any romance in them really at all.
Wow. That is really cool.
So see, she's a sister from Purgatory. She's a sister from CMP.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, we've just got all these little ties. It's great.
We're kind of joined at the hip, I think, at this point.
It's kind of funny. But yeah, I find that it's really interesting, because she'll say my publisher, and I'm like, well, which one? Who are you talking about today?
And for me, it's like I keep it segmented into what book I'm like dealing with. If I didn't do that, then I'd get completely confused.
Yeah, and Sorrow's Point is the other book, and that's the published title, going to be, correct?
Yes.
And that's coming out in October, correct?
Yes, October 15th, 2013.
Okay, from Crescent Moon Press. So she's got, and that's, that. What genre is that? Are we horror, straight horror with that one?
I actually consider it more of a paranormal fantasy, because I think my main character, Jimmy's sarcastic personality and his tendency to be a complete smartass to half the paranormal things that happen negates the horror of the situation. But since I'm a conformed horror film addict, it's hard to scare me. So I always have trouble deciding, okay, is this horror or is this fantasy?
Yeah. And you mentioned you will get a print copy right off the bat, pretty much, with CMP. So that was a lot of why you went ahead and subbed to a second publisher, correct?
Yes, that was one of the main reasons. But, I mean, everything else Earlander has been great about. I mean, they give great cover art. There's three different rounds of edits. Everything for the release date was on time. They're a great company. It's just that I wanted that initial bite of a print book as well as the ebook, so I could have all avenues covered instead of just waiting for one.
Yeah, understood. How long have you been writing, Danielle? What and why did you decide to write?
I started out when I was really young writing poetry, actually. I was in a Christian elementary school, and every week there was like a contest of who could get their poem posted on the wall. And all the same people kept getting their poems posted on the wall. And I was finally like, you know, there needs to be some new blood in this. And so I decided I was going to write a poem. And eventually I wrote one that got put on the wall. And after that, I continued writing poetry. I have so many, like, weird little poems and things. But it kind of progressed to then writing music. And I actually wrote songs for a while. I wanted to be a rock star when I was a teenager. And after that, when I went to college for theater, I got involved with some people that were doing directing and things. And I started writing plays. And then, you know, when I came up with the idea for Matthias was definitely not a play. He was definitely not a poem. So he had to be a novel. So I had to learn how to write a novel.
I love that progression. That is such a fascinating progression.
It makes it difficult because I tend to, because I got used to writing longer doing drama, I tend to forget about settings. So my initial drafts are very short, and I have to go back and add all the nuances and the description and, you know, the character's thoughts and everything, things that, you know, the actor would do in drama. So it makes my writing process a lot longer than it normally would be for someone who just flat out started writing prose.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's time for MythPrint, tips and tricks of the industry.
Well, it's time for another one of our special segments. MythPrint includes a basic tip concerning writing, marketing, or anything else to do with the industry. Danielle, do you have any tips about contacting publishers that you want to share with everyone?
The biggest thing is to really research which publishers you're submitting to and pay attention to their submission guidelines. For instance, there are some publishers that will only accept the manuscript in specific file types. Word is standard, but some actually prefer RTF. The other thing is, as in the case of if you were searching for a literary agent, you have to have a really solid, awesome query letter, because otherwise they're not really going to pay much attention to you.
That makes a lot of sense.
And the query letter for a publisher is a little bit different from the one that goes to an agent. At least mine was. Was yours?
Mine was basically the same. The only difference was that I believe I changed how I addressed it a little bit. But the actual query letter itself, the basic like description, everything was the same query letter that I used.
That's interesting. You know, writing is such a process of so many things. What do you love most about what you do?
I think coming up with these characters that appear out of nowhere. You know, I never in a million years would have imagined I would have come up with a street kid who gets turned into a vampire only to discover that he's the reincarnation of a long-lost vampire king. Where does that come from? But it appeared in my head one day, and then I had to find out who Matthias was. How does he react to things? What's the reason that he reacts to certain situations the way he does? And that process was both a lot of fun and also kind of heart-wrenching because of all the horrible things Matthias does deal with.
Well,
go ahead, Carl.
No, I was just going to say, but that's also got to be the fun part. I mean, I can see where you might be torn emotionally about that because he does go through so much, you know, so many traumatic things, but on the same thing, that's what makes him. So I think that even that part would be fun.
It's fun in a sadistic sort of way. After a while, you kind of get into this thing where you really like to torture your characters, which is awful to hear. But many writers that I've talked to say the exact same thing. You're going through and you know this character and it's like, okay, I need something to advance the plot. What's going to be the big giant oomph that's going to make everything else happen? And usually it's something horrible that happens to the character. And you have to be creative and, you know, with my darker interests and things, I usually come up with some really graphic, horrific things. And so it's kind of interesting to think of things that aren't quite the norm, even in the things that I usually am interested in, and try to be creative about what happens to the character.
I'm wondering, because you write similar to me in the sense that it comes from your characters, and I'm wondering if that's that theater background again.
It very well might be. I mean, because, you know, a script is focused on what's happening to the character, where they move, you know, their progression throughout the course of the play. And, you know, the setting for drama, of course, is usually decided upon by the director and the set designer. The writer really has nothing to do with that part. So I think that's probably true.
Is there anything about the process that you don't like?
For me, it's typing it all in. I'm kind of a weird nerd in that everything that I write has to be written out longhand with sparkly gel pens. Why sparkly gel pens, I don't know, but it has to be sparkly gel pens. So you can imagine me writing, you know, somebody getting killed in a very horrific way with pink sparkly gel. But, of course, the problem becomes that eventually has to be transferred to the computer, and I have to sit down with all my scribbles and try to decipher them and type them in.
Wow. I can't believe that you would hand write all of that nowadays. That is so cool.
I think it's because when I started writing, I didn't have a computer way back when. And, you know, I think it's just, I learned to write longhand and have that connection with my mind. And I've tried just sitting at the computer to write, and it just doesn't work.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me, actually. It may sound strange, but it sounds perfect to me. Authors work in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
Are you a planner that outlines everything and making extensive notes? Or are you a pantser flying by the seat of your pants and letting your book go wherever it will?
I am a total pantser. The one time I mistakenly tried to outline, I ended up with a first draft that was less than 15,000 words, and American say that that is a horrific, horrible thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the average length of the book, young adult, the kind of cutoff is between like 45,000 words. It has to be at least that. And so to start out with a book that's 15,000 words, I had a lot of work to do. So I have never outlined since. And if I do it by the seat of my pants, I seem to go just fine.
That's, yeah. And do you keep your wordage in mind as you're writing?
Yes, I do, because I know that, like, for instance, I just finished writing the sequel to Tale of the Devil, and I knew that I had to get at least 25,000 words of a first draft in order to reach in the ballpark, because roughly I tend to double the amount of words that I've put in. So I'll end up probably between 50,000-55,000 words with that one. And interesting enough, Earlander actually requested that the second book be shorter, and usually that's not the case. So that's why I kind of shot for that word count.
That's interesting. You have got so many projects going on, and I know I've tried to keep all of your projects in my head as I go through, because I've beta read some that aren't out there at all yet. And what is your next? Tell us where we know Sorrow's Point in October. What else do you have going on?
I have Constructing Marcus coming out with Earlander Publishing. I would imagine sometime in 2014. I haven't been given a release date yet. It's about a young girl who moves to a Victorian house, who discovers that her house is not haunted by a ghost, but by a construct, which is a spirit that is created by a witch to do her bidding. And so that one's coming up. Then I have a young adult thriller that's about a boy that is learning how to do MMA that ends up being kind of stalked by a serial killer. And Mare actually beta read for that one. That one I'm kind of shopping around to agents and seeing where that goes. And then I just submitted the sequel to Sorrow's Point in June. And, of course, I just finished the sequel to Tale of the Devil. And then after that, I have two other projects that I'm thinking about, but I haven't quite decided on yet.
You're so busy.
She is. I don't see how she keeps it all straight.
I write lots of notes. It's like Matthias in the book, like, he keeps lists. That's me. I'm the one that's always writing lists. Otherwise, I would never keep anything straight.
I don't know that I would either. That would be like jumbling it in my brain. Well, we've seen a lot of changes in the industry in just the last couple of years. Like we just pointed out that when you first started writing, you just hand wrote instead of going to the computer. How do you feel the changes have impacted your own work, and how do you feel about those changes?
I think the biggest thing that I'm dealing with right now is the fact that while self-publishing is a good thing and it's a good outlet for writers, there are so many writers that are putting out self-published material that is not properly edited, but they put it for such a low price point, it makes it harder for authors that are getting published by companies to get noticed. So it's really hard, even with social media, to stand out amongst everyone else because everybody's always like, look at my book, look at me. And so you have to try and figure out, okay, what's something really unique I can do to be like, hey, I'm here. So I think that's probably the most difficult thing with the changes in the publishing industry that's going on right now.
Well, as someone that has watched the process, you know, kind of closely because of me following Mayer and how she has had to do things, I find that if I was a writer, that it would, the whole process would be very frustrating because there is so much that you have to do on your own, you know, and that's a tremendous amount of work, especially getting known and getting listened to out there in social media.
Absolutely. I mean, and I've talked to authors that are traditionally published, and they're actually having the same thing. Basically, unless you're somebody like Stephen King, you have to do everything yourself these days. The advertising departments of the publishing houses pretty much focus on what they consider their main books of the year, and everybody else kind of has to scrape together what crumbs are left. And so that makes it really difficult. It's not, I don't blame the publishers because monetarily it makes sense to focus on what's going to be the possible hits. But as an author, trying to stand out and trying to do all of this advertisement yourself, and everybody's doing the same advertisement, it does make it very difficult.
Yeah, it really is. And right now, there's so much. It's like this industry is changing day to day.
Absolutely. I mean, one day you'll hear, oh, you know, when you're doing a contest for a blog tour, make sure and put your book in as one of the prizes. Then 2 days later, after you've already set the contest, you'll be like, you'll hear somebody say, oh, don't put your book in because nobody will buy it. Then they'll wait until after the contest is over. And it's really kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's the rules, so to speak, not that there's rules for something like that, but the conventional wisdom is changing, you know, day to day and depending on who you're talking to. And it really is, it's a very, that old curse, may you live in interesting times. I'm definitely living in interesting times where my writing is gone.
Oh, absolutely.
The myth number is...
And now it's time for Myth Nomer, our word for the day. And today's word, in honor of Danielle, is vampire. Danielle, there are so many different kinds of vampires and vampire novels and series and everything out there. Do you have any special tips to give for writing vampire novels?
My biggest one would be watch every vampire movie that you can. Then go back and read all the folklore you can, because you have to find some of the things that are unique about the myth of the vampire to make yours stand out from everyone else.
It's good advice.
Well, now we come to the fun part. Not that everything else hasn't been fun, but this is so fun. If you could have a dinner party with any 7 people, living, dead, or fictional, who would you include?
I know Mayor was laughing because I first started out with 10 people. There's a lot of people from history and books and things that I would like to meet. The first one would probably have to be Humphrey Bogart because the first time I saw the Maltese Falcon, my eyes were just frozen to the screen. He had just such a presence. And, you know, I think he would have been an interesting person to talk to about, you know, his acting process and, you know, how he developed his characters and things. The second one harkens back to my little vampire stuff. I would love to have met Vlad Sepish, the real Vlad the Impaler, because, you know, there's conflicting information. Some people view him as he is thought to be, you know, like this tyrant and everything. But for the people of Romania, he was actually given the job of keeping out the Turks and saving them from the Turks, which he did rather well for a good many years. And so to him, he's a hero. So it'd be interesting to actually meet the man and find out what made him tick, what made him make the choices he made, that type of thing. Third would probably be Mikhail Baryshnikov, because he was just an amazing dancer, and I still can watch him for hours dancing Giselle. The fourth would be Lestat from the Anne Rice novels, because he, in my opinion, is just the coolest vampire character of all time. Then I would love to have talked to Severus Snape. I think he would have been a blast. And I've really gotten into Tony Stark with the Iron Man thing, so I think he would have, with his personality and his bantering with the other people at the table, that would have made things kind of really unusual. And my final choice would be Agrippina Vaganova. She is the one who developed Vaganova technique of ballet in Russia, and her technique was what I learned when I used to do ballet. So it would have been interesting to see and talk to her about how, you know, she developed her technique and that type of thing.
What an eclectic group.
No kidding. That's exactly what I was going to say. What a fabulous, fabulous choice. Good job, Danielle.
Well, thank you.
I want to go because I want to meet Severus Snape.
You're more than welcome. We'll make sure and try and come up with some sort of interesting drink concoction he'd be really impressed with.
Exactly.
Danielle, what question do you never get asked that you wish someone would ask you when being interviewed? And what would your answer be?
I actually have thought about this quite a bit, and I'm not really sure. I'm kind of unusually, I guess you could say, focused more on my books than on myself. So when I think about somebody asking me questions and they come up with something new, I'm just kind of like, oh, okay. So I guess that would be a question that isn't commonly asked amongst authors. That would be fun. Maybe something like, when you chose to make Matthias a vampire, why did you choose a vampire instead of another creature? To me, it's just, you know, of course I'm obsessed with the vampire thing, and I think vampires are the coolest characters around, but, you know, I think that for me, you know, there's a lot of times when authors get asked, well, you know, what prompted you to write is a really common one, things like that. So anything that's new, I think, would be fun.
That sounds pretty cool. Well, everyone has their own personal myths, things a lot of people think about us that may or may not be true, their own personal myth behaviors. What myth behavior do people believe about you that is absolutely not true?
I'd say the biggest one is that I'm really outgoing. I'm actually really kind of a shy person, but I put on a really good act.
That's an interesting answer. I wasn't expecting that one.
I like, especially, you know, when I talk to somebody on the phone for the first time, for some reason, specifically the phone, I'm not exactly sure why, but if I have to call somebody, even if it's something as simple as ordering a pizza, my hands start getting clammy and I get nervous and everything. But, you know, like talking on the computer, I'm fine, but on the phone, I'm just like, ah!
That's really interesting, Danielle. We're going to chat about that later on.
That works.
Now, what misbehavior do people believe about you that really is true? Aha.
That's probably that I'm kind of crazy. And it is true. It's not that I'm certifiably insane. It's just that I tend to gravitate towards the things that people don't normally do. One of the funniest things I think I've done in my life is I had a whim one night and I decided that I was going to go to Walmart at like midnight. And at the time, my hair was cropped about 1 inch long all over my head and it was dyed platinum blonde. And I was wearing a pair of point shoes and I didn't feel like changing them. So I went to Walmart with bright yellow hair, wearing point shoes, and bought a spatula and a jar of Vaseline.
I'm left speechless. Speechless. I bet you got the looks.
More so over the spatula and the Vaseline instead of my getup, which actually is kind of more abusive than anything else.
Wow.
I'm sure.
I wonder if you're on one of those websites of Walmart people.
Probably not, because when I did this, this was like 1993 or 4. So that was prior to a lot of this internet stuff that's really common now. Oh, so in a way, I guess I dodged a bullet there.
Well, Danielle.
Yeah, the point shoes would have been fun.
It was. They were really slippery on that floor, though.
I bet.
Yeah, I would bet.
Well, listen, this has been so much fun. Danielle, thank you so much for being our guest. We appreciate your information and sharing with us. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And yes, thank you for taking the time out of your busy, busy writing schedule. I think you've given us a lot of great information, so we really appreciate you joining us today.
I'm perfectly happy with coming back anytime.
Excellent. Well, remember, everyone, you can go to mythbehaving.com for more information on Danielle DeVore and links to her book. You can also read her bio and find links to her social media.
And don't forget that you can download this episode on iTunes, or you can listen to it right on the mythbehaving.com website.
Please take a moment to leave us a positive feedback on iTunes. That's how we climb up that iTunes ladder.
And don't forget that you can subscribe to us on iTunes and never, ever miss an episode.
Well, thanks for tuning in to Myth Behaving. We'll see you again next time. I'm Carla.
And I'm Mayor. And we are Myth Behaving, where reality meets fantasy. See you soon.